You're listening to Michigan Politics, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Matt Bach.
So, welcome to the podcast. This is the Michigan Politics, podcast. That's the name of it. Is that fancy? You like that?
Hey, it works. It works. It's something you won't forget.
That's right. I try to do Michigan Politics for Dummies, but apparently the For Dummies thing is trademarked.
Oh.
So then I thought, well, what about like Super Bowl of podcasts? And I guess that's taken too.
Oh. So well, isn't bad.
Yeah, I know. It's good. I like it. I like to have fun with it. So here I am. The voice you hear is Kyle Malin of MERS News Service. So people, our members probably hear MERS and they think something different than MERS News Service.
There's, you mean like MERS selling carpets?
No, there's MERS with an E.
Oh, that's
which
right.
Which is Michigan Unemployment, Michigan Employment something or another.
Yeah. And we then get those calls.
MERS with an I. So tell me a little bit about what MERS with an I is and what you do there.
Well, MERS is an abbreviation for Michigan Information and Research Service. And we are a daily political report, Monday through Friday,
that
also provides many other services. We have bill tracking services. We have directories of all the House members and senators and members of Congress and what committees they sit on, where they sit on the House and Senate floor. We also do administrative reports, just tracking state government from head to foot. And we've been doing that since the Constitutional Convention back in the 1960s.
That's when you formed then?
Yeah, the company was created back during the Constitutional Convention to give the folks who were kind of keeping track of state government the ability to know what was going on in the convention while also knowing what was going on at the Capitol.
So was it started as a state agency almost, or still was
separate?
Oh,
no. Okay. No, it's always been a private company.
Okay.
We are a private company. But the idea was to help those who have business in the state capitol know what is going on. And like I said, that's through a lot of different ways. And over the years, it's taken different forms. We send out daily alerts on other headlines of other news publications that have to do with state government. That's one of the other extra things that we do. We have our own podcast, for example, MERS
Monday. Yeah, when
Monday.
Is that? MERS Monday?
MERS Monday comes out every Monday.
All right.
It's a weekly podcast.
Where can people find it?
It's at MIRS News.
Okay.
Podbean, PODBEAN.com.
Right. We use Podbean as well here for this podcast.
Yeah, so, and it's a great service. So we have our own podcast. And so we've tried to evolve as technology has evolved. We used to be published on a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
Now it's entirely online.
Okay.
So, and we actually made that transformation back in 2004.
Oh, wow.
Before a lot of other folks had even considered doing that, we saw the paper as being a waste, and quite frankly, we were burning out copy machines quite a lot. We didn't use a printing service.
Oh,
we actually had our own
Xerox
huge copy machine. It's up in our conference room right now,
wow.
Matt. It's more of a
you still
article.
Have it?
Yeah, it's more of a relic for some type of museum now.
For the museum, right. It belongs in a museum. So so basically you're like a one-stop shop for all like legislative news, right?
I mean, yeah, legislative news, and we do a lot of state government stuff too. We have a reporter who is specifically designated for the administration, all of the state departments and the governor's office. We also have a reporter who covers all court proceedings, and there's been a lot of court action here, particularly recently with the Flint water crisis, and we had those two legislators got expelled, and there's court carryover that is still going on with that. So it's been very, it's just not legislative action, although that's really what our bread and butter is. But we try and cover everything doing with politics and state government, whether it's, either any of the three branches of government.
Okay, so when you talk courts, it's not just state court, the Supreme Court, or even appeals court. It's wherever the news takes you, it sounds like.
Yeah, and remember, our focus is always state government, right? And and how local governments also can be impacted.
Right.
So we're not going to be covering court cases that have to do with a necessarily a murder case or something high profile. It's got to have some kind of connection to state or local governments, or it's got to be precedent setting in some way.
Like right now, a lot of our members might be familiar with the whole dark stores issue in case, and that's in the courts, and it's something you guys have been following right along, I believe, right?
Oh, absolutely, and that's something that our court reporter is keeping an eye on and waiting for that thing to pop.
Yeah.
But that one, the Flint water crisis, and all the cases that have kind of spiraled from that.
Yeah.
We're covering all of them.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. Now, what's your position with MERS? Are you, where are you?
Well, I'm the editor, and I also own a portion of the company.
Awesome. So we got the owner, one of the owners here.
Yeah, a minority share owner, though, to be sure. But I came to MERS in 2001.
Okay. And what was your background?
Well, I've always been a reporter. I worked for the my college, community college newspaper. I did my high school yearbook.
And where was high school?
I went to high school in Byron Center.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. And I went to Grand Rapids Community College for a couple years and worked on the Collegiate.
Oh.
And we won the award for best college newspaper. The Pacemaker.
Yes.
In my sophomore year. Yeah. It was very exciting. Beat out Lansing Community College. They were our chief rivals. And we from there went to Michigan State. Worked at the State News for about two and a half years,
Something like that. Okay, so I'm a Chippewa and a CM lifer, so we always competed for the State News for the Pacemaker Award.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was, and surely it's very competitive, and I was the editor there for a brief period of time, and then I went to the Town Courier, worked for the Millimans, Dirk
Where's
and Dick.
Where's that, Town Courier?
The Town Courier covers East Lansing and Meridian Township. And, well, it did at the time, and I'm presuming it's still around. It was owned then by the Milliman family.
Okay.
Since bought out by Gannett. And, I was there for a little bit, a year or so, and then I went to Yuma, Arizona. Covered state, or city government for Yuma, Arizona.
So you just said, leave in Michigan and try a different state?
Well, yeah. Funny, I wanted to go just somewhere completely different. I was sitting at my desk on April 1, and I saw the snow falling out my window. I thought, this is just a cruel joke.
Day. Yeah, exactly.
It's a cruel joke. So I started applying to Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and I got that one in Yuma. And certainly did not snow in Yuma, Arizona on April 1 or any other day, for that matter.
So what happened? What brought you back?
Well, I went to I moved out there with my now wife to Yuma, Arizona, and then we went to Chattanooga, Tennessee. She got a job with a TV station there.
Oh, okay.
I got a job in the carpet capital of the world, Dalton, Georgia, doing the newspaper there, and then moved up to Boston, Massachusetts.
You've been all over.
Yeah, I did some work for SchoolSports.com, which at the time was the high school affiliate for ESPN.
Oh.
And I covered sports in the state of California out of an office in Massachusetts.
Oh, my gosh.
So I did
That's got to be interesting.
Yeah, it was. I had
especially with the time difference. They have their late night, Friday night games, and you're on the East Coast trying to call coaches. And
well, you know what? We didn't do any game coverage.
Oh, okay.
It was all profiles and rankings and that kind of stuff. So I did have freelancers, though, who were on site. But when that budget dried up, and it was just me. It was all a lot of calling. And so I covered high school sports in California for a year without going to a single game or stepping foot in the state of California.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was hard, but, that's what the telephone and internet was for, I guess.
Well, that's interesting. It's part of the reason why I wanted you to come on, because I have a journalism background, too. I was a newspaper reporter for about almost 20 years before I left, and now I'm very happy as director of communications for the Michigan Municipal League. But, you know, when I was at the Flint Journal, you know, we had 35 reporters covering news, and now they have about 4.
Yeah.
So just from your perspective, you're an online publication. What's it like? How has journalism itself changed, particularly, you know, from, you know, this podcast is kind of geared toward, you know, Michigan Municipal League members like mayors and managers. How has it changed over the years from your perspective, and what can, you know, our members learn from that experience?
Well, journalism's changed a lot, and you know, you've been in it for longer than I have, and I can just tell you in my 20 years, it's changed so much. And I still remember being in college, and Burl Schwartz, who works for the City Pulse now, we own City Pulse in Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
He was our advisor, and we were talking about these electronic devices that at some time you could read the publication right there on your screen,
right.
And you just carried it around, you know, and, you know, now they're the iPads, and they've been around forever, it seems like. But at the time, it just seemed like this new wave technology. What do you mean? You're getting rid of paper? And, you know, and
exactly.
When I went to the town courier, we were still, I had to introduce pagination to these folks. They'd never even heard of a Quark Express and just laying things out
right.
on a.
Yeah, pagination's a layout of newspapers.
No, we were still doing glue and
sticky wax.
Oh, my goodness. You know, now, just from a reporting standpoint, you know, you noticed, you mentioned how newspapers have really shrank to nothing. And I like to think that at MERS, our staff has gone up as opposed to going down.
Okay.
Which, you know, is...
go ahead.
And that's certainly a positive. But the internet has made things easier to... It's made it easier to multitask.
Hmm.
The information is so quick.
Yeah.
So you don't need as many staff. I can do many more stories now than I could then.
Okay. Well, how is that? I mean, these articles are still about the same length and stuff.
Oh, they are. But the information, the backstories that I need, I don't have to carry a file around with me anymore.
Right.
If I don't know the person's spelling of the name, I don't have to waste time calling people or looking through directories. I can find it in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know? If I missed a fact... I can go online and look at the committee schedule, and I couldn't do that before, you know?
Right.
Information is a lot easier to obtain than it was before, and it's made my job a lot more efficient. And I think, even though the Capitol Press Corps has shrank to, I would say it's probably about 10 to 12 people.
Wow.
It really is.
What was it when you started there?
Oh, it was probably twice that.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the AP itself has shrank from four people to one, you know, so.
Okay.
And then before I even came in, I've heard stories that it was even larger, you know.
Yeah.
But for your members, you know, you got to realize that there's very few people doing this now. And our attention is distracted in many, many ways.
Right.
And so, you know, we're not, you know, I think there's this mentality that we're out to get you or whatever, you know.
Right.
We're looking for compelling stories. It's true.
Yeah.
If there's somebody who's doing something they shouldn't be doing, yes, we want to find that out. But we don't got a lot of wasted time.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's got to be something compelling for us to write about in order for us to write about it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's unique to the state capitol. I think that's something you're seeing. Across the state.
Now, what do you normally do with press releases that you get? Do you have like a spot for them on the site, or do you just kind of turn them into stories if they're newsworthy, or what do you mostly do?
Well, thanks for mentioning that, Matt. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's one of the things we've done as we've evolved with technology is we upload all press releases right up to our website.
Okay, so they can create their own news and get them on there?
It's
got to be related to something that you would cover, I would assume.
Yeah, but we have... hundreds, if not thousands, of press releases now archived on our website.
You want to stop and get some water?
I'll get some.
Okay.
And then, but they're right there. And so folks just peruse press releases all the time. So even if it's something that we can't turn into a story for whatever reason,
right?
It's archived there, and folks who subscribe to MERS do see it.
Okay. Where do you see things heading? Particularly with journalism, but online journalism yourself, do you have more competitors than you do because it is online? And there is a lot, you know, everyone has a blog, everyone has a podcast. Where do you see things headed?
Yeah, from a competition standpoint, you know, the blogs and those kind of things, I think there's always been attempts to try and find new fundraising or ways to make money, right?
Yeah,
the
right.
people who are doing this for free come and then they go.
Sure.
Because nobody wants to invest their time into doing something where they're not getting some return for it, right? I mean,
right.
what's the point? I mean, your enthusiasm for something only lasts so long, right?
Sure.
At some point, there's got to be an economic benefit. And that's the thing with MERS. I mean, MERS, Gong, where we are a paid subscription. So that's how we make our money. And people are willing to pay money for it, and increasingly so in our case.
Do you have sponsorships too, or is it mostly?
No.
Okay.
It's people who pay. And we do small ads, but they're off to the side, or they're banner ads at the top. And we don't do pop-ups and do distracting things where, you know, all of a sudden audio pops in on you and completely envelops your entire page and makes you wish that you weren't there anymore. I mean, it's a very, it's effective for us, newspapers are struggling across the state, though, and across the country to try and find ways to get the money in to make things afloat. And that's really where the struggle is in journalism going forward.
Have they, you don't see anybody in those kind of figured it out yet? Or
they're trying. I think, honestly, though, that papers are starting to get to more of a subscription-based kind of model, and honestly, that's where it's going to have to go.
Well, it seemed like they got, like with the New York Times and Washington Post, they were free for a while, but now you got to subscribe to get on there. You see more papers kind of going that way.
They're
going
to have to go that way. There's just no way to do it with ads. And, you know, operations like MLive have tried really hard to do it that way. But there's only so much money you can make. You know, I mentioned schoolsports.com that I worked there back in 2000, 2001, and we had to fold up shop because we tried to do it on just banner ads, and you just can't do it. You can't get enough. I mean, you do all the algorithms and everything else you want, the micro targeting and everything else that you want to do. But when you've got a staff that you're used to that's really large, and you've got overhead costs and everything else, you know, corporations are quickly discovering what we've decided long ago. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
So you got to charge the people who read news, and that's hard because people want everything for free, and they're conditioned to thinking they can get everything for free. But like you said, as the New York Times is finding out, sometimes for good information, you got to pay for it.
Yeah, and that's interesting because you know how do our members? You know, we talked a little bit about this already, but how do because I hear complaints like, you know, they only cover the negative, or they don't even cover us at all anymore, you know, that kind of thing. What can you think our members, our cities and villages do to try to reach, you know, a larger audience for this stuff that they're trying to do?
Yeah, and it's hard for local municipalities. And I think in rural areas it's easier to an extent because the papers are hanging on there. But, you know, for suburban publications, sometimes it's hard to reach that audience. And what I would urge them to do is to, if you don't have somebody on staff who does public relations, then you should hire out to just have somebody who can write very nice, crisp, clean press releases.
Right.
And have those press releases sent out. And if it's in even if a local newspaper that's cut way back doesn't have time to cover that event, they can just cut and paste that release and put that in their paper.
Right.
You know, press releases that are devoid of spin, things that just get to the facts about what the situation is. Obviously, a quote from, you know, an official of some sort that promotes what's going on is appropriate, but it just makes things a lot easier if an editor sees a press release that doesn't have spin in it that they can just put right into their publication.
Yep. Make it spoon feed it,
and it's so hard. And you know this, Matt. It's so hard for folks sometimes to write crisp and clean and make it an effortless read. And if you can find that person, whether you have to contract out for that or hire them in house, it's very important. And even if you just put it on your own website, folks can digest information that way.
Right. What do you think about the whole? And the term just popped in my head, and I hate using it, is the fake news thing. But more of the not the actual fake news, but just the fact that because journalism is so fast now, you talked about multitasking and all the different things, you can put things up really quick. You know, there's been that kind of whole backlash against the media for trying to be so fast that the mistakes happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Know, but there's mistakes been in paper since the beginning of time. But what do you think? Is there that danger out there? Or are you seeing?
Oh yeah, I mean there is a danger. You know, you're trying to get news out there so quickly because you know it's still a competitive field, right?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be out the first with the news because if you're not first, then your stories are less likely to get read.
Okay.
And the whole point of writing is to have people read your stuff. And if they're not reading your stuff, what's the point of writing it?
Right.
But I understand that sometimes mistakes happen in the quest to be first. That isn't fake news, though.
Yeah.
Fake news has become a catchphrase. It's been developed
Our president has kind of twisted it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's created it to mean news that you don't like.
Yeah.
You know, you don't like a story, thus it's fake news.
Yeah.
I see fake news as being more about outfits or individual reporters who are crafting a story in a way that has an intentional bias to it, but created under the auspices of real news.
Yeah.
And that's disturbing. And I think you see that, and I think folks know what websites we're talking about and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, you've got obviously Breitbart on one side of the aisle, and On the left, there's plenty. There's one I'm trying to think about.
I don't know if Huffington Post qualifies as that or not.
No, some, it's, it borders, but
the
it's
one
not
side
right
would
there.
Probably say it would, but the other
yeah,
side.
Yeah, I was thinking of whatchamacallit, that one site, Fox. I want to say Fox, but.
Not Fox News.
No, it's not Fox News, okay. But there's different okay. blogs out there that try and represent themselves. The Daily Kos might be a good good example.
Yeah.
You know, that try and masquerade themselves as being a straight and narrow publication, but they're not.
Yeah.
You know, and so folks take what they read out of those things and take that as the gospel truth. And that unfortunately, I think, is more on the fake news side than, honest reporters who make a slip up in the quest to put out news quickly.
Yeah, that's a whole big kind of evolution that's happened under the current administration, but really before the election, the presidential election. So I'm here with Kyle Malin of MERS News Service. Kyle's probably one of our busiest guys. We're at our Capitol Conference here at Lansing in 2018, our 51st Capitol Conference. And Kyle hosted our awards gala last night. You're getting ready to go into a panel discussion, a general session coming up. So we appreciate all that you've done for you. Why so involved with the league? Why are you here? Or, what's been your interest in being here and kind of working with our members?
Well, I appreciate all groups that show an interest in state government and trying to learn more about the process. You know, I appreciate all the work that you guys do here
sure.
At the Michigan Municipal League, but I don't differentiate between any of them. I like to make myself available to. Share whatever knowledge you think I might be able to share with members. And
great.
For cities and villages, it's, I mean, this kind of stuff is what happens at the Capitol impacts them greatly.
Right.
And so any information that I can share, I'm more than happy to come and do that and participate. And plus, I just happen to like you guys, too.
Well, I appreciate that.
That helps, too.
And completely unrelated to this, you happen to also be related to Chris Hackbar.
Sure.
Through marriage, right? Is that
yes,
correct? He
yeah.
married your sister.
Well, so we married sisters.
Oh, okay.
So he married Heather. I married Bridget.
I got it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So give us a real juicy Chris Hackbar story that's clean for the podcast.
I can tell you what. Has he ever talked about his... it's not French toast, but he makes a great breakfast casserole.
I didn't even know Chris cooks.
Oh, no. He makes, he loves breakfast.
Oh, okay.
And he loves breakfast casseroles. And what he makes, it's a cinnamon bread type cinnamon roll kind of thing. And the last time he fixed that, I think it was for an Easter dinner.
Oh, wow.
It just knocks your socks
great.
Off. It probably had 3,000 calories in it. But, it was so good that he overlooked it.
Well, I live in the Flint area. One time he called me on, like, a Saturday morning, saying, I'm here with some school event or something with the kids. I got an hour. Where can I go get some really good pancakes? So he's a breakfast guy. That's
he is
sure.
definitely a breakfast guy. He
All
loves
right.
it.
Well, Kyle and Lynn, thank you so much for joining the podcast. We appreciate it. And thanks for coming on.
Matt, thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.